All right.
So Acts chapter 10, just a recap for those that are coming in, joining us, or weren't here on Wednesday. We had talked about Cornelius and how he was a good man and he was a praying man, but he wasn't a saved man. And so because of his good and honest heart, God sought to get the message of salvation to Cornelius. And so he sent an angel to Cornelius so that Cornelius would send for Peter. We talked about why it is that with the angel being sent there that he didn't just go ahead and tell Peter what to do. And the reason why is because God has chosen through preaching to spread the message, human-to-human contact. And so that's why he has selected that he would send for Peter. And Peter will tell you what you must do. We make mention often of the fact that Jesus had told Peter that to him the keys of the kingdom would be given, keys unlock, and we saw his lesson being recorded in Acts chapter 2 to unlock that door of salvation to the Jews, and now God has chosen him to unlock that door of salvation to the Gentiles. But before that could happen, Peter had to be instructed. He had to be encouraged. And so he had a vision while on a rooftop in Joppa. And that vision was unclean animals within a blanket and a voice saying, "Rise, kill, and eat." He didn't want to do it at first. And so it was something that God had to keep teaching him. Three times that takes place. And while he's wondering what that vision meant, then the messengers that Cornelius had sent had arrived. And the Holy Spirit now told Peter directly, get up and go with them, doubting nothing. And so that's where we left off last Wednesday with that instruction. Any follow-up comments or questions? All right, so let's now read of Peter going with them and him meeting Cornelius. So in Acts chapter 10, there, we'll start in verse 23. Actually, back up to verse 22. And they said, "Cornelius the centurion, a just man, one who fears God and has a good reputation among all the nation of the Jews, was divinely instructed by a holy angel to summon you to his house and to hear words from you. Then he invited them in and lodged them. On the next day, Peter went away with them, and some brethren from Joppa accompanied him." So we had also mentioned last week about how it was important that men from Joppa also went along with Peter. These would have been Jewish Christians, Christians that were formerly Jews, but certainly believed in the necessity of following God, and in particular the Old Testament. But they came along because this is a first. They're going into a Gentile home. So Peter has plenty of witnesses to come along. Verse 24 says, "And the following day they entered Caesarea. Now Cornelius was waiting for them, and he had called together his relatives and close friends. As Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshipped him. But Peter lifted him up, saying, 'Stand up, I myself am also a man.'" So here is the much anticipated meeting of Jew and Gentile, of Peter and of Cornelius. Now we see Cornelius was waiting. I mean, he didn't know exactly how long it's going to be. I mean, he's hoping that it would be sooner rather than later. But he had gathered himself and his family and other close relatives and said, "We got to be on time. We got to make sure that we are there. We are available whenever he might arrive." And so there they are, just waiting. Well, as soon as Peter comes in, what is Cornelius' first thought to do? That's right, to worship Peter. Now, Peter, though, says, "Nope, this cannot be done." Now, why? Because he's just a man.
That's right.
He's not the Pope.
That's right. He's not the Pope.
Yeah.
Right.
As a Catholic would say. But disregard.
He's just a man. You know, and now, he's a special man for sure. He's an apostle. I mean, there was only 12 at one time. And so here he is, but he still realizes there's nothing holy about his flesh, right? I'm just a man. Please stand up. So some of you have made the connection to the Pope, because of course that's kind of customary that you're to kneel before him, kiss the hand. I read of one individual that one time he said he had the occasion to have an audience with the Pope, him and about 100 other people. And as soon as the doors opened for the Pope to make his entrance, he said everybody fell to their knees. And he said he was about to do so as well until he remembered this passage right there. And so he remained standing. Oh, you think about that, the peer pressure that would be involved of, well, everybody's doing it. And yet, he said, I could not do it. I could not do it. So, it is sad how, well, number one, how the Pope receives that. He should think about this passage himself. But number two, how people are so willing to do that, when Peter himself refused that. There is a statue of Peter in Rome, a metal statue. And if you were to visit that statue and look at its toe, you'd see that it would be very shiny. That's right. Because of many people that have bowed at his foot and kissed the toe. This very man, the image made for this very man who said to Cornelius, don't do that. You know, he certainly would be offended by such. Roll over in his grave and didn't know that such is being done in honor of him. So, he doesn't say to Cornelius, well, as long as you understand that it's God that's important, it's okay that you go ahead and do that, right? No, no. Get up. I am also a man. That kind of respect belongs only to God. Comments? Questions? Yes.
Man has always sought to worship something, and we are oftentimes impressed with other people. Nothing wrong with being impressed with them, so we just have to realize at the end of the day, they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like we do. It's man. And not only that, John over there in Revelation was the same way as Cornelius. He was impressed. Probably no man could impress him, but it was the angel that impressed him. He fell down for him. And the angels recognized that only worship is reserved for God only. You know, he said, hey, get up. I'm a servant just like you. See, you not do this, you know, and worship God. And that's the way that it is.
Absolutely. That's right. Your reference there was in Revelation chapter 21, I believe. No, 22, excuse me. Revelation 22, where he does fall down at the angel's feet. And actually, there's another place in Revelation where he does that as well. But in Revelation chapter 1, John sees the glorified Lord, and there he does fall at his feet. In Revelation 1, verse 17, and when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. But he laid his right hand on me, saying, do not be afraid, I am the first and I am the last. And so the Lord doesn't tell him, you know, get up, I am just a man, right? He certainly was deserving of that respect, but I love how the Lord says, do not be afraid. And so he's worthy of worship, respectful worship, but one doesn't have to be terrified if they are submitting to the Lord Jesus. Another instance in Matthew 28, when Jesus was raised from the dead, in Matthew 28, There, verse 9, it says, "And they went to tell his disciples, behold, Jesus met them, saying, Rejoice. So they came and held him by the feet and worshiped him." And notice he says something similar. Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid." And so he received worship. He was worthy of worship, but he didn't want them to be terrified of him, but rather to serve him with honor and respect as he was deserving.
Phil. When that venomous snake, that viper, had struck Paul, and they, you know, expected him to die, and he didn't die. And I think that's the occasion that they brought out incense to him,
yes,
to worship him, venom him. They wouldn't have it.
Right.
That's what the man, they call it Pope, and if he's really concerned about pleasing God, he would have to say, "Get up, I'm just a man."
Right.
Worship God.
So why is it then, with so many clear scriptures about this, that people so freely are willing to do what scripture said not to do for men? And we're not talking just a few thousand. I mean, we're talking over a billion. I mean, that's how many that supposedly is within the Catholic Church. But then you also got the Eastern Orthodox Church. You got the Greek Orthodox Church. Others that will have these relics, these picture frames, these statues that are daily bowed before and worshipped or kissed. So why do you think that is? That's a good point. So, lack of knowledge.
Well, I mean, to back up what she said, whenever I lived up in Duke, my secretary was with Catholic, and I talked to her, they didn't even moan about it. They said, "The priest will tell us what we need to know."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, she had no knowledge of it. She was a wrong woman, you know. And that very, the priest will tell us what we need to know.
Her faith was in her priest.
Yes.
Yeah.
She had no knowledge. She didn't even know how many books were in the Bible. You know, and just, you know, she couldn't tell me probably the difference between an Old Testament book and a New Testament book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she couldn't. I know she ended up. So a lot of that, see, a lot of that is tradition.
Right.
Because, I mean, going all the way back to her great whatever. So, I mean, a lot of it falls in, you know, tradition, family lines. The reason why they answer your question. Some of the reasons why they do it.
Right. Very good.
They don't know anything else.
So lack of knowledge, tradition.
And the thing about it is also another thing that it's granted they are the biggest, okay? But like the media, they refer to them as the church.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. So that implants things in people's mind too. Oh, that's the church. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. For people who may be searching for something, they hear that, you know. And I say, well, I'm a member of the church, of the Lord's church. They say, well, how can you be? Because they're Catholic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a lot bigger. Bigger is better, you know. Bigger is right. But they, you know, right. Their point of view.
So following the crowd, the majority.
They're on that wider, as Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
To that narrow.
Right.
And it's more convenient. Now think about it. Salvation between the Lord's church and the Catholic church. You can have a lot more fun in the Catholic church. You really can. You can go out and do whatever you want. But once a year, whatever, go to the little booth and you're fine. Even when you die, they have a way that you can get out of hell. You know, even if you're sinning, you can pay the church, you know, for less time in purgatory or whatever. You know, they've got it covered all in all the rich. So it's just so much more convenient.
Convenient.
and everything else like that. Between the Lord's Church, it is a lot easier to be a member of the Catholic Church and receive salvation according to them.
Right. So truth would take away that convenience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sister Nancy. Good, good. That's the appropriate verse to use there. Folks don't know, and as Tim was saying, some just really don't want to know. You know, it's not convenient. It goes against tradition. And that, to them, is more deserving of their service and homage than what the Lord actually said. But then we also have to realize, too, there's some that maybe are just sincere, and they're just going along with the crowd. They have to pick up a Bible, right, and begin to read and to search. And they're going to read the same passages that we read. They will. Yes?
Yes, but I do think we're studying the Acts because Cornelius had a just heart, mm-hmm. a great desire. Search, and you will find.
Right. That's right. And just to see this action right here shows a couple of things. Number one, that he was imperfect with his knowledge. He didn't know what was right or wrong. He's willing to fall before and worship a man. But we do see in that a sincere heart saying, I'm just wanting to do what is right, whatever that is. Whatever that is. And so he has to learn what that is. And Peter begins to instruct him along those ways, along those lines. Jesus, God, the Spirit, they're the ones that are worthy of worship. Good comments, everybody. Anybody else? All right. So this is a good discussion about why it is that we would see folks do that today. And of course, the Catholics will teach that Peter was the first pope, and yet he acted very unpope-like. Verse 28, Peter says, "Then he said to them, 'You know how unlawful it is for a Jewish man to keep company with or to go to one of another nation. But God has shown me that I should not call any man common or unclean.'" So Peter begins with this, that there's this cultural barrier. It just me being a Jew am not allowed to do certain things. So verse 28, "you know how." So Cornelius, being this just man, who has done many good things for Jewish people, as we say, saw there last week, knows the Jewish customs, knows the Jewish law. And so he refers to that. You already know how what we're doing here is a big, big no-no. Yes, Miss Betty.
I was wondering, and I don't know the answer. This one conversation with Gentiles, that was the
Mm-hmm.
But just the association with non-Jewish nations, was that forbidden?
I know what you're saying. I don't know if there's a direct precept about it.
Just tradition and it's support underneath for that tradition.
Tradition and also the eating, because they ate different foods. And so, like we discussed on Wednesday, that just by those dietary restrictions, that was going to separate them because they ate something totally different. In fact, in chapter 11 there in verse 3, it's that's what the Jews were all of a sudden angry and hot about with Peter. They said, "You went into uncircumcised men and ate with them." See, that was something they wanted to highlight there. It wasn't so much the talking, but it was that you went and you ate with them. So that was one of the things they wanted to highlight, because that was clearly, you know, stipulated in the law. But as you mentioned, with tradition and as prejudice begins to form, that those almost become the new law, right? The new barrier. Like, if I don't go in and talk with them, then I'm not going to eat with them. So it
business tribes with them?
So, right. And now, some did do that, but some said that that part of the tradition was that if you did do trades with them, then whatever it is that you traded with them was ceremonially unclean. And you had to cleanse yourself, you had to cleanse that item. So there was a process they went through so that they would be okay with that particular trade. But it goes to show all those various things would build up a prejudice in one's mind for this person, this type of people. So it had a way of, yes, keeping Jews, but it certainly went beyond what God had stipulated in law. And
even today, that's true. They have
to, right, they have to, exactly.
I have seen it before at a plant, like the pickles or cucumbers, where you take them in, the farmers take them in. You used to grow cucumbers. And these pickle companies that had kosher pickles, they would have somebody come down in the truckload that was, we loaded up, or they loaded up to get ready to go to that factory. They had to do a ceremony because now they're kosher.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can go be processed and sold as kosher pickles. You know, I live in Wayne County. There's not a whole lot of Jews there. And some guy comes out in some big outfit and everything. And it drew attention, you know.
Right.
But this guy.
And that guy made it kosher. The guy made it kosher.
So that means now that load of cucumbers can go to this plant. And now they'll be kosher pickles.
That's something.
So.
So some tradition and superstition. Yes.
14-year-old guy. I got an education that day. I really didn't understand what was going on, but then my dad explained it to me, you know.
Right. Yeah, that would be something interesting for sure. That would be interesting for sure to see.
You know, people in Wayne County, you know, everybody just sit back and scratch their heads. But the truck couldn't leave until he did his process. And so that's true today, you know. Even with the ham, and things like that.
So right, right.
They still have those things.
Interesting thought. Anybody else? Yeah, like I said, we just have to see this as very radical and different, that they're not used to. Just like, you know, we might see an individual today that has all sorts of markings, tattoos, or piercings, and to spend time with that person, it's just going to kind of go against the natural inclinations or the grain of our feelings, but it doesn't mean that we still shouldn't present the gospel to that person, okay? Whereas that's kind of the feeling that Peter would have had, or Jews would have had, to be with Gentiles, and certainly to eat with Gentiles. It just would have went against the grain of their natural raising. And so it was something they would have to overcome. And we see here that Peter recognized that God was trying to teach him this lesson. That God has shown me I should not call any man common or unclean. So they're not just unclean because of who they are, who they were born from, or the color of their skin, or the way they looked, or what nation they came from. Right? Uncleanness comes from sin, from transgression of law, and there's only one cure to sin, and that is Jesus Christ. So every man needs Jesus Christ. So God has shown me that I got to get past that. I've got to overcome that, be willing to keep company with one so that I might be able to teach them. I forgot to read verse 27 where it says, as he talked with him, he went in and found many who had come together. And so this was not just going to be a discussion with me and one other Gentile. It was going to be in a room filled with, like I said, the individuals marked or tattooed or you know, ears straight. You know, it had been a very uncomfortable feeling. Okay? that he would have been experiencing, seeing so many individuals of this nature together. But he realized, this is what God was trying to teach me. I can't just keep my distance because they're different than I am. So verse 29, he says, therefore I came without objection. And as soon as I was sent for, I asked them, for what reason have you sent me? So he wants to hear now Cornelius's side of the story. So Cornelius begins in verse 30. 4 days ago I was fasting until this hour. And at the ninth hour I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing, and said, Cornelius, your prayer has been heard, and your alms are remembered in the sight of God. Send therefore to Joppa and call Simon here, whose surname is Peter. He is lodging in the house of Simon, a tanner by the sea. When he comes, he will speak to you. So Cornelius essentially tells him exactly what the angel had told him to do, and what he was doing at that point as well. He was fasting into this hour. So we see Cornelius having a Jewish practice, essentially. He was a God-fearer. He was very devout and concerned. And here he was even willing to withhold himself from food or drink for a particular time so that he might be focused on prayer. And as he was doing this, this angel appears and tells him who to send for, where to send for this person, and even the person's name that he is staying with as well. Very specific instruction. Yes, Brother Ross.
Peter didn't even know what was the purpose that Cornelius wanted him for. And sometimes we look at the apostles as spiritually all-knowing. But that's not the case. It is the case when they were speaking for God, when they were penning the New Testament, they were infallible. In that way, God was leading them, that whatever they were teaching, whatever they were preaching, whatever was being wrote down for the Bible was going to be absolute. That's understandable. But on a personal level, outside of that, in many ways, they were just human beings otherwise. And they wasn't infallible. He didn't know. You know, he was just a man. Jesus put it, God put this way, that man, even though it's a miraculous spirit, they weren't given that spirit on a limited basis. However, when it came to Jesus, John said he gets the spirit of God unlimited. You know, so that was a difference. And the apostles just were men. And he had to ask the question, why he sent them? He didn't know.
Right. A good scriptural illustration of the difference is when Nathanael came to Jesus. Nathanael didn't have to tell Jesus what he was doing. Jesus already knew what he was doing under the fig tree. And then the next chapter, it says that Jesus not only knows what people are doing, but even what they're thinking, where it says that they didn't have to commit themselves to him. He already knew what was in him. And that's John 2:25. Yeah, that's right. So that's the difference between Jesus and Peter. All right. So Peter had to inquire. Good comment there, Anthony. Anybody else? All right. So he's now been given the information. Peter is in this crowd. He's understood that God has been trying to give him a lesson as well. So you have two people learning here, don't you? Right? You have Christian learning and you have non-Christian learning. And this goes along with what Nancy's mentioned many times, that we're always learning. You know, we're always able to gain more knowledge and mature and grow wherever we are at, even if you were an apostle. And so here he says, God has shown me. So even he is learning as well. He's learned from Cornelius what has taken place with the angel. The angel says, when he comes, he will speak to you. So he realizes that God wants him to speak that message of salvation. I mean, that was why you bring an apostle for an occasion like this. So Cornelius says these words, verse 33, and I love this verse. You can do a whole sermon off this verse. So I sent to you immediately, and you have done well to come. Now, therefore, we are all present before God to hear all things commanded you by God. There's a whole sermon in that. So I sent to you immediately, right? When you realize that you're not right before God, but you want to be right, you don't just mosey through that. You begin to make the steps necessary to take place so that can happen. You know, here is a fasting man, a praying man, a giving man, but not a saved man. And when the angel tells him that, right? In Acts chapter 11, it says the angel will tell that Peter will tell you words by which you and your household will be saved. And so, you know, he says, I got to rectify this right away. I sent for you immediately without delay. Then we see, he says, you've done well to come. Now, therefore, we are all present. Or your version might say, we're all here. We're all here. Wouldn't it be great if a church could always say, we are all here? There's no one missing. We're everybody. This is important to all of us. And so everybody is present. Everybody is here. Not one of us would want to miss out on this. Nancy?
And because he has a heart to desire to come and see, to hear, and come together, to hear all not what pleases
me. Right. Right.
Then it
me. Absolutely. That's right. Don't leave anything out. Right? Even if it would step on our toes. Even if it would make us upset or uncomfortable. Right? Because he knows that they're not right. We're not saved. You know, we want to be. We want to be. So you can't, don't leave anything out.
That's right. Because of his good
heart. That's right. How many folks like that do we meet today? You know? They don't want to hear. If they're not saved, they don't want to hear that they're not saved.
Sometimes I don't like to hear what I hear.
Right. But this is the heart that's committed before God. You know, make sure we're right. And right standing before God. Is that Tim? No? Okay. So this is a great heart. So come to us immediately. You've done well to come. We're all present. You know, no one's absent. There's the Spirit. That's right. And he says, we're present before God. You know, that would be good for us to remember as well. That we are present before God, especially here, but wherever we are, nothing escapes the notice of God, that we live in such a way that we understand that we are visible before God. But as we come together, that we are present before God. So then we're not going to be, you know, dilly-dallying or not caring about what is taking place, but that we have this mind of reverence, respect, and readiness before God. So we're all present before God to hear. So we didn't come to visit necessarily. We didn't come to pass notes or to whisper to each other, you know, during the lesson or the class. We're here to hear. We're here to hear. So that we instill that in ourselves and our children, and that all that would come, that's why you come.
And when we think about the great number of people in the United States that don't want to hear, it can be discouraging to us. However, there are still people like Cornelius in this world that want to hear. And they don't want you messing around, so to speak. They want you to tell it like it is because they want to be saved. So that's encouragement for us all, that God has always had that way, that somebody will hear where most people won't in this country. But if you go in some of the third world countries, they're walking mile after mile, hour after hour, just to hear somebody preach the gospel. But in this country, we seem like we saturated, so to speak, with that kind of stuff, with false religion, with denominationalism, so we just turn our nose up at all of it. But still, it's some honest people, even here in the United States, that want the truth. But it's our job to not pass judgment. We so easily do. We look for the nice guy. Man, this guy got all this stuff in order. Wouldn't he just be the perfect Christian? And God's looking at the humble guy, the guy that's been broken, the guy that says, whatever it takes to be saved, I want that. And we don't know the heart, but God does. And so he tells us to tell everybody.
Very good. Good comment. Very true. Good comment. All right, so we've gotten these various points from this one verse, and Nancy mentioned that we want to hear all things, so don't leave anything out. That's another good thought. All things, though, commanded, right? Commanded. So it wasn't, we're not here just to hear, you know, Peter, your good fishing stories, right? We don't care about your opinion. We want to hear what's commanded by God. And so that's, again, the kind of preaching that we ought to desire to hear. Something that comes from God's Word. Something that is inspired by truth here. And so give us the truth and don't hold any of it back. And so that needs to be our demand as well. Again, like I said, that verse will preach. You can just make a whole lesson and talk about every one of those specific things in that particular verse. Comments, questions about any of this here?
Because God had to bring His Son down through the Jewish nation. He didn't want that preserved, you know, till He got there. But now it don't make any difference about what race, what color, what nationality. God, as Peter said, is no respect of person. But he that feareth God in every nation, and through wisdom of God, God gonna get some of every race, and has got some of every race, and that's the way He designed it, that a few from all people will acknowledge that He is God and serve Him the way He's commanded.
That's right. The Jewish nation and system was necessary to show that God was the God of the Bible, you know, that tether of genealogies to Jesus Christ, to show that He was the author of all of this, and so you could believe it, you could take it to the bank. But it didn't mean He didn't care about other nations. That's right. Good. So as we think about Cornelius, and we think about, you know, our day today, and trying to spread the gospel, how do we find more Corneliuses? Yes.
Someone we meet, we think of him as a prospect.
Okay. So folks that we meet in our day-to-day lives, they could potentially be a Cornelius. Good. How else?
A lot of times when you're just talking to someone, like, you know, I don't think McDonald's for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It just kind of works itself out. You don't have to sit down and just start him.
That's right.
You sit there and talk to them for a little while. They may give you a trouble sitting down. And you can kind of work it in.
Right. Good.
Not Isaiah 41:13. It's caught a lot of people's attention when I told it to them. Because people today are needing to know that God.
That's right. Good. That's what I was trying to get at. You don't make someone a Cornelius. Cornelius was a Cornelius. It was his heart that wanted to search too. And so you're right. You put a seed of truth there and see how they respond to it. And that shows if they are truly searching, or if no, they're content, as I mentioned earlier, with tradition, or you know, their lack of knowledge, or just their lives the way that they are. That's right. Did you raise your hand again, Charlotte?
I was just going to say also by our example.
Okay. That's right. That can cause someone to inquire, what is it that you believe? Yes.
Wait, if Tim? You look for people like Cornelius, you could just go down and any church down here right now, anybody that comes out. Because there's a reason that they're there.
Hmm.
Because they have some connection with God. But they're like Cornelius here, they're misguided. So, I guess any person that's in the denomination.
Could be, unless it's like you said, because of tradition or lack of knowledge, or.
But what I'm saying is, you know, there's, but they're there.
Right.
It is a point I'm trying to make. So at least they have some type of interest or belief, I guess.
Some kind of belief or interest.
Yeah, belief.
So what we have to find, the missing ingredient is the searching heart, right? Ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, and so. But we don't know if they have that heart or not. Nancy? Okay. Brother Ross, did you have your hand up too? No? Okay. So that's what we want to do, is we don't make a Cornelius. One is a Cornelius. You just have to try and do your part, like Peter did, to be there and approach and to give the truth and trust that God does his part, that his providence does work for us to be in touch with mankind, and that it could be that that particular person is searching that particular day, and you happen to come across them at McDonald's or along your way or whatever it is, paths that you cross within a day, and trust that God is doing his part, so you do your part. Okay, we're out of time for this morning, so we'll mark it there at verse 33 and 34, and come back on Wednesday night, Lord willing. Thank you all for your good comments.